Well, brethren, have you ever felt like just giving up, as I've heard, just throwing in the towel? I've had enough. Remember Popeye, the sailor man? He said, I can't stand no more. You get the point where you just can't stand no more. And, you know, you get the point where you're teetering on the brink. You know, brink is like, it's a drop off. And, you know, it's a drop off, an edge or a margin you get to. A steep place you could go off. Once driving, this has been a few years, the interstate wasn't finished from Shawnee to Oklahoma City, but the dirt work was. And driving from Shawnee to Oklahoma City on that two-lane hilly road, you know, I said, I don't mind driving on dirt. I'm taking the interstate. So, man, I'll go barreling down the interstate, and I come to a bridge. What I didn't realize, at the other end of the bridge, there was no dirt. It just had not been filled in. It was just a drop-off. And I slammed on the brakes, and I thought, I'm going, and I stopped. And I didn't go over. I kind of looked out, and it looked like my front end was hanging over the sky, you know. Well, there I was. I was teetering on the brink. And, you know, people's had, you know, the Sabbath day, when you begin observing it, you're many times you choosing between the Sabbath or your job. That's just the way it was. It was that way with me and others. And you come to the point where you got to make that decision. Well, I was combining grain, and it doesn't wait for anybody. You know, the farmers waited all year. Oh, you're going to not cut tomorrow? So I was teetering on the brink. What would I do? You know. Another time a man was being sued, and he was in a business transaction, and it had to be settled, and he had to go to the feast. And he was told, you go and you're gone during this time, you will be sued when you get home. And those with children know, maybe it's not that big a deal now, but it used to be an issue with schools. You're taking your kids for 8 days. School just started 6 weeks ago or 2 weeks, whatever it was. And they were told, you take your kids out for 8 days, and the DA will be calling you when you return. So there's another decision. You could say you were just, hey, am I going to go off the edge, or what am I going to do? One lady felt like just giving up, because the situations became so discouraging, she, you know, just felt like ending it. You know, I've just had enough. I can't keep doing it. And they're just teetering on a life and death situation, considering her home life. Well, as people would say, the world is going to Hades in a handbasket when you look around. You know, hey, we're finished. That's enough. But, you know, we think we've seen it bad, and we have. What has God seen? Let's look at Jeremiah chapter 5, 1. I won't spend a lot of time here either, but just so I Be sure I'm in the right place. Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 1. And here, Jeremiah 5, 1, instruction given to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem. And see now and know and seek in her open places if you can find one man, if there is anyone who executes judgment, who seeks truth. Is there anybody? He said, go and search. See if you can find one man that's still standing for the truth. This is what God is seeing. Isaiah chapter 59. And we know God is watching when Abraham made the choice. He was definitely on brink to sacrifice his son. Afterwards, then the eternal God said, now I know what he will do. Now I know he will keep his commandments. So in Isaiah 59 now, I won't turn over to Genesis there about Abraham. 59 verse 14. It says, justice is turned back and righteousness stands afar off. Isn't that how we feel? We look around, maybe even in our own life. It says, justice is turned back and righteousness stands afar off. The truth has fallen down. It's lies, lies, and more lies. It says the truth is fallen in the street and equity cannot enter. And verse 15, it says the truth fails. The truth may be told, but it's failing. And he who departs from evil makes himself a prey. And those that choose, no, I'm departing from evil, they've just set themselves up as a prey. And God has seen all of this more than one. One more verse I'd like to look at, and that's in Ezekiel. Turn over a little farther, Ezekiel 22. More of a paraphrase here, but Ezekiel 22 and verse 30. We've seen these verses, I know. And here, is this God seeking? He said, so I sought for a man among them who would make a wall and stand in the gap before me on behalf of the land that I should not destroy it. He said he sought for a man. Was there a man that would stand in the gap and save a nation even that I should not destroy it? But I found no one. Well, today my title is Teetering on the Brink. You know, the edge, the margin, a steep place. And I'd say, if everyone here has not been there, I would really be surprised. Teetering on the brink. And my purpose is, I want to talk about returning from the brink. You're on it. What are you going to do? Well, I guess you could say my first point would be to say God's people face obstacles. I don't think there's any doubt about that. God's people face obstacles. And, it was mentioned earlier, most of us or some of us have been following the Deuteronomy chapter 1. And I'll just summarize some of that. We won't have to go through that. You're reading it. But in Deuteronomy 1:28, they found there's giants. We can't go in there. there's giants. And even there, it's recorded that maybe the coffin or the bed of one of those giant kings was like 13 feet tall. And that wasn't just, somebody just sprung up like a tall piece of corn. This is a real man. Huge. But God then reminds them in verse 29 that he will fight for them. There's no way they can take down this giant the way they look at it. Anyway. And he just encourages them, verse 40, then turn and take your journey. Christians face these obstacles, say, there's no way I can do that. But God says, take your journey, because he's going with us. We have a choice. When we face obstacles, we have a choice to go and face the giants. We all face giants, not the physical human beings of the past. Or do we turn to the safety of this world? You can go to the edge and you can go to the safety. You can save your job. You can save your family, your husband or your wife. You can save them by not going forward. And in verse 43, it says they wanted to do it on their own time. Oh, then they decided, well, yeah, let's go in. Now that they were all admonished, but it's like, yeah, we can go in now. Now the time's right for me. I can go in now. Well, of course, that ended in a disaster. So overcoming obstacles. You know, if we went to Deuteronomy chapter 2, in the beginning, 4 and 5, we see God had already given the people of Esau a mount, a territory. He was, like encouraging them, look, I've given Mount Seir to Esau. I've given Ar to the descendants of Lot. Those are all relatives of Israel. And in verse 10, it shows that there was giants in those lands. Those people had to face giants too. I seen what they were called, Zumzumums or something. I can't pronounce that. I haven't learned English real well. And Jameson Fawcett and Brown said that these were a bullying, presumptuous band of giants. The descendants of Lot took that land, God's saying. God gave Esau and Lot their land. He's saying, would he not do even more for Israel? Yeah, and that's where we face. God has done great things. Would he not even do more for each one of us? Well, then I go on. I like to talk about trusting God's unseen hand. We don't see. I mean, the Israelites, they went Mount Sinai, and at least 70 of them seen the form of God, and they all heard his voice. But God is to us maybe like an unseen hand. Let's look at Psalms chapter 11. Psalms chapter 11. And in verse 14, we see that God is watching. Psalms 11, verse 14. But you have seen, for you observe trouble and grief to repay it by your hand. The helpless commits himself to you. You are the helper. That's not what I want, because I'm reading in chapter 10 instead of 11. So let's let Gerald go over to chapter 11 in verse 4. The Eternal is in His holy temple, it says. His eyes behold, His eyelids test the sons of men. God is watching. His eyes are watching closely the sons of men. So, trusting in an unseen hand, knowing that God is watching. And in Psalms 18, if we turn there, Psalms 18, in verse 6, in my distress, isn't that what we do? In distress, God allows distress. And when we're in distress, what do we do? Psalms 18, verse 6. In my distress, I called upon the Eternal. That's what we do. We call upon Him. And I cried out to my God. And what happened? He heard my voice from His temple. And my cry came before Him, even to His ears. Yes, He hears, but many times, you know, our own children may really want something and they feel they really need it, and that's not the right time. It's just not the right time. As a parent, we know better. And God, sometimes we wait. Also, let's look at Jonah. Yeah, Jonah definitely got to the brink. And the unseen hand would have to save him, wouldn't it? Jonah, chapter 2. And here we have Jonah. You know, God sends him, and he goes to Joppa, and he goes the other way. He's running away. He doesn't like the assignment. We don't like the assignment many times. God, they can work this out some other way. Why do I have to face this? Jonah said, he's getting out. Well, anyway, by the time in chapter 2, verse 7, that he had been thrown overboard, a big storm came, the sailors threw him overboard because he said, it's because of me. And he gets swallowed. He gets swallowed by a great fish. He said, verse 6, I went down to the moorings of the mountains, the earth with its bars closed behind me forever. I mean, closed behind me forever. He's done, as far as he's thinking right now. Yet you have brought up my life from the pit, O Eternal my God. And then he explains more in verse 7. When my soul fainted within me, the International Version says, when my life was ebbing away. That's how close. When his life was ebbing away, I remembered the Eternal. And so what happened? You know, we run into trouble. Do we remember our commitment? He remembered the Eternal. It's kind of like he had forgot. I'm just getting out of here. I don't want this job. But then he remembered. As we remember, we remember our spiritual commitment. He said, verse 7, I remembered the Eternal, and my prayer went up to you into your holy temple. He said his prayer went all the way to God's holy temple. That's how far it went. My prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Elcott's commentator says Jonah was just totally overwhelmed. He was overwhelmed. Barnes notes says he had a faintness of heart. He was like down to the last thread that he could bear. But he says in verse 9 and 10, "But I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving." That was the sacrifice, and we can all do that. With the voice of thanksgiving, then what happened? "And I will pay what I have vowed." Oh, now I'm going to do the vow. As we make that vow at baptism, you remember the vow. He said, "I will pay what I have vowed." So the obstacles come, but we always remember, what have we vowed? Because he says then, salvation is of the eternal. In other words, saving ultimately is in God's hands. You know, the unseen hand. We have access to God's very throne. And would we not remember? I don't think we need to turn to 1 Kings. You remember Elijah? He went through with the priest of Baal, and then he could face them, but he couldn't face a woman. Jezebel said, "By this time tomorrow, you're going to be like them." In 1 Kings chapter 9, in verse 2, he fled Jezebel. 1 Kings 19, what did I say? I'm at 19, verse 2. And by the time in verse 4, he was saying that he might die. He prayed that he might die. He's at the end of his rope, he felt. "I've had enough. I'm no better than my fathers. I've done all this, but I'm no better than my fathers." I could turn there, but I was just kind of reading my notes. In Kings there. But he said, "Look, I'm no better than my fathers." Verse 14, "I've done your work. Look, God, I've done your work." And look at all the works that Elijah had done. "Now I've done your work, now they're going to kill me." Boy, after I've done this, I've faced these obstacles, and now they're going to kill me. And then in verse 15, I do need to read that in 2 Kings 19, in verse 15. "Then the Lord said to him, 'Go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you have arrived, anoint Hazael.'" In other words, you think you're finished, but your work's not finished. No, it's not finished. And you know, Elijah just felt like, "Hey, I'm no better than my fathers. I haven't accomplished anything. I'm down. I'm not worthy." In a way, he's saying, "I'm finished. I'm through." But then God says there in verse 18. "Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all those knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." Elijah didn't even know this had happened. He didn't see God's hand. No, but there was, "I've reserved 7,000 in Israel." And if we turn over to 2 Kings in verse 6, then Elijah had anointed Elisha to take over, in a sense, his ministry when God was ready for that to happen. 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 16. Here, Elisha had gone out and there was armies surrounding the city. They didn't have a chance. And his servant said, well, verse 15, when the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses, chariots. And his servant said to him, alas, my master, what shall we do? We're surrounded. What are we going to do with an army? And then what did Elisha say, or the servant of God? So he answered, do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Oh, but this servant didn't see anything. And Elisha prayed and said, Eternal, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. Then the Eternal opened his eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around. They were there, but it was unseen, because that's a spiritual thing, and God has to give special vision. When Stephen was being stoned, he said he looked up, and he saw Jesus standing at the right hand of glory. God opened his eyes. I know some said, oh, that was just a vision, was it? Said he saw. It shows right here that God can open a person's eyes to the spiritual. And he opened his eyes, that the Eternal opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and the mountain was full of horses and chariots. Yes. So you see, God's unseen hand can certainly be there. I know a couple that years ago were in up in Niagara, I think, for the feast. Then they went to, is there a Buffalo, New York? Yeah. They were in a neighborhood they shouldn't have been in, but they didn't know. And they're walking down the street, and here come these guys right to them. So they cross the street and get over. Those guys cross the street, coming right to them. And, you know, what are they going to do? All at once, those guys just stopped. And, I mean, they turned around and got out of there. Why? God's unseen hand. I don't know what was walking with them, but whatever it was, those guys didn't want to mess with. So there is trusting in God's unseen hand. We have access to God's very throne, as we may read in Hebrews chapter 4. What does it say there in Hebrews chapter 4? If we think God isn't taking our feelings and our situation. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14. I'm going to get to 16, actually, but we'll start 14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold our confession. It says, let us hold it fast. Why would you need to hold something fast? Because something's trying to take it from you. So he says, hold it fast. Verse 15, for we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. Here's a high priest that has sympathy, that's been through it. He's not asking us to do what he hasn't done with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are. Yes, tempted as we are. When we stand on the brink, that's a temptation. Yet he was without sin. Verse 16, let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help when in time of need. Oh, here's the water. So there it is. Let us come boldly. We can trust in God's unseen hand. And, you know, it's only after the fact when we look back that we can probably see that. So it is a matter of trust. Yeah. We could also look at, in the book of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Let's look at Daniel 3. We're not that far from there. Daniel 3. In verse 12, I think probably all of you are well aware of this story. Daniel 3, verse 12, we see these three young men. And there's certain Jews the accusation was brought against. There are certain Jews these authorities were bringing to the king. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province. These guys were in positions of authority. These three Jews. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set. No. He had made a decree that he had to be worshipped, and his image that he made would have to be worshipped. These three Jews refused to do it. So then, verse 14, Nebuchadnezzar asked him, "Is this true? You won't do this? You won't serve my gods or worship the gold image?" There in 14. And then he gave him a chance. Okay, we'll do it again when you hear the music there in verse 15. If you'll bow down then, you know, things will be okay. But then there's that but if. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Excuse me. It's getting bad up here. And then he said, "Who is the God who will deliver you from my hand?" He said, "You won't do it? We'll see. Who's the God that's going to deliver you?" And the these men answered. And said to the king, "Man, I don't know if I'll get through this or not." Yeah. Well, God's unseen hand, right? Okay. And so, if you don't, there in verse 15, if you don't worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fire furnace. And what then was he say? "And who is the God will deliver you from my hands?" There they were. They were at the brink. They could have just said, "Well, this one time, we can do it. And things will be okay. Look at the positions we're in. We've got a pretty good thing going here. Probably really good thing." But they answered. And they're in 16. "We have no need to answer you. If that's the case," in verse 17, "our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. He will deliver us from your hand, O king." But in verse 18, "But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image." They had to make that decision then. the consequences would be up to God. They might get thrown into the furnace. And as you know, they were. And the king had said, "Who will save you?" And also we know Daniel in chapter 6. Again, the petition went out that only you would serve the gods of that world. But see, in verse 10 and 11 of Daniel 6, there Daniel, he stood in the gap, didn't he? Daniel 6, in verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, okay, he knew the consequences, didn't he? He knew it was signed, and the writing was signed. He went home, and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed, "Give thanks before his God." Notice, as was his custom since the early days. He wasn't doing it to show off. That was what he did. He didn't stop doing it. He had to make the choice. And of course, then the men, they assembled and they went to the king. And in verse 14, we see that the king knew Daniel's answer. Daniel was a valuable man to the king. And the king was there in 14, he was very displeased with himself and set his heart to save Daniel. But then the men approached the king and say, "Hey, you can't do this. This can't be changed." So in verse 16, the king gave the command and they brought Daniel and they cast him into the den. I mean, it went that far. It wasn't like, well, God could have stopped it right there and said, "Hey, wait a minute." Nebuchadnezzar's changed his mind. Those that's got the petition, they've decided this is a little radical. No. And they cast him to the den of the lion. You might say the king spoke encouraging words. You could say that. I guess it says, because he said, "Your God whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." So they sealed the which would have been his tomb off. We know in verse 22 that Daniel, when he was saved out of this, oh, then the king, I'd like to read verse 19. "And the king rose very early in the morning, went in haste to the den. And when he came to the den, he cried out, lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, 'Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually.'" He knew he served him continually. I don't know how Daniel and his friends serve God in that pagan. I mean, what did they do about the Sabbath? They were doing something. Because it said, "The God whom you serve." Then Daniel said to the king, you know, "Live forever." And the king, in verse 23, he was very glad. And there wasn't any damage found on Daniel. So you see God's unseen hand. You know, there was no injury because he relied on God. We know that God is our helpers. We could look at Hebrews again in verse 13, in verse 5. It hasn't changed. God doesn't change. Look what these four men went through. I don't think any of us have gone to that point before. You know, going in with lions, that's not a good thing. I've been listing some of the books of, what was it, that lion, that man-eater from England. I mean, he faced down those man-eaters, but hey, he was armed and he had experience. I don't want to face a man-eater. And that's what these lions were. Anyway, back to Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Because it says in verse 6, so we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? Well, he can do a lot of things, but in the overall picture, he really can't do anything. So when we stand there in the brink of giving up, always we need to remember there are obstacles. When we take that commitment to serve God, we take that vow at baptism, there are obstacles, because obstacles is what builds us into becoming God, in a sense. Just remember that God is near and we can trust his unseen hand. Well, we just remember that sometimes we are teetering on the brink of losing out. We're just there. Is it worth winning this war? Has anybody ever thought that? Is this even worth winning, this war? When you're teetering on the brink of losing it. Well, is it worth it? You know, at times we're going to feel defeated. What about Jesus? We won't need to turn there. Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me? I would like to turn back to Psalms chapter 22. I think the Council of Elders are looking at this. I don't know for sure what they're looking for, but they're looking at this statement. Psalms 22, verse 1. Dude, this is a quote right from Psalms that Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me and from the words of my groaning? I think it's unusual if most everyone here hadn't thought the same thing. God, where are you now? This is really more than I can handle. Might even go far. I didn't agree to this. Yeah, you did. You agreed your life. Sometimes it occurs in our mind. But we know that as we have read in Hebrews 4, 14, 16, Jesus sympathizes with us. He knows, just like he prayed to the Father, Father, if possible, can this cup pass from me? And we could say, hey, is this really necessary? Can't you just intervene and take this away? But then Jesus, of course, he added, but not my will, but yours. Showing that the human feelings that he had, that we can come boldly to God's throne. And he says that he'll never leave or forsake us. Doesn't he? Well, we're in Hebrews, so look at chapter 13, verse 5 and 6. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things you have. Well, I've read that. I will never leave you nor forsake you. The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do? What can man do? Brethren, we are tested. That to build the character of God That's just a necessity. And we're called at this time. The majority of the world, God will deal with at a later time. But we are tested. But even the world is tested. You know, you see it going on right now in politics. Those that want to stand up for certain decencies, they're being tested. Well, you remember the man driving on the bridge embankment? Well, he didn't go over. He gritted his teeth, and he's holding the brake, and with the other hand, trying to find reverse. And get on the gas pedal without rolling forward any. Sometimes that can be difficult in a stick shift. You know, we used to do the brake and the foot feed. You know, that's all history, I'm sure. But, you know, and he found reverse and he came away from the brake. He didn't go over. And the man who had to choose his business, he made the right decision. And later God gave him another, I believe he did lose the business. But God set it up for even a better one. And what about Our Lady, who thought herself so worthless? That is so sad. And I saw Jordan Peterson, the psychologist, talking about the saddest thing he sees is people without hope. I mean, that's as bad, it seems, as it gets. You know, thinking you're a worthless failure. But, you know, in her case, she remembered God's calling. And I guess you could say, and faced the giants and did God's will. I mean, that's at the brink of going over, you know. In that case, it's like Jonah. Her life was ebbing away, maybe at her own hands. But it was. And remember what Jonah said. I remembered the eternal, and my prayer went up to you. As if she would remember, God said, don't do that. You know. Because she remembered God's way and not her way. See, also, brethren, we face the giants too. You know, at that final curtain, you've heard the song, at that final curtain, what do? Well, we take the blows and we do it God's way. That's what we do. We take the blows. And there are blows. And we do it God's way. We are the one to do justly. We're willing to depart from evil and actually become a prey by departing from evil and not taking the easier route and go ahead and compromise. We can become a prey to be taken advantage of. Brethren, we stand in the gap. That's where we are. And we return from the brink.